Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Focus Roundtable series, Simplifying Social Business. My name is Katie Kobe, and I'm a community manager here at Focus.com, a business and technology platform dedicated to helping business professionals make better decisions. Each week in this ongoing series, we'll hear Dr. Natalie Pettahoff and Kathy Herman discuss topics designed to help business leaders break down silos so they can successfully implement the social business model. These weekly roundtables will arm business leaders with key takeaways they can directly implement in their own companies. Before we dive into the introductions, I'd like to let each of you know that this event is being streamed online inside of Focus's new live event application. In this app, participants can ask and vote up the questions that they'd like for me to bring to Kathy and Natalie's attention. Participants can also chat live with each other and share questions or comments directly with their social networks. I'm in the app myself monitoring your feedback, so please feel free to share your thoughts. Now I'd like to go ahead and introduce you to our host for today's discussion. Natalie, could you please tell the audience a bit about yourself?
Hi, yeah, thank you very much, Katie. Well, many of you know me. I was a Forrester analyst. I've also run consulting practices in large consulting firms, was the strategist for a large PR and marketing agency. And now what I'm really focusing on is talking about and helping customers, brands, and companies understand what is the business value of social media, and also helping vendors look at their marketing message to make sure that they're really, they're not just talking about social media as kind of the pie in the sky, everybody needs this thing, but really focusing on what business value can enterprises and small businesses get from it.
Great. Thanks so much. Kathy, could you please tell the audience a bit about yourself?
Sure. I'm an independent consultant, and I help companies to ignite positive change by holistically fusing people, process, and technology. And like Natalie, my practice includes a center of excellence in the business of social business. And one of the things that impassions me is to help companies to optimize their customer relationships by grounding them in ways that real people relate and do business with each other. And so a lot of where I focus in on is related to the people, process, and technology part of things so that companies can implement programs that will have a holistic impact on the corporation and benefit both the company and their customers.
Awesome. Thanks so much. Go ahead, Kathy.
We're real excited to be able to continue this discussion about social business over the course of 10 weeks. Today we're in episode 4 of the discussion, and what we want to do today, the first few weeks we started to set the stage by helping people understand what social business is and what it means to be a customer-centric company. And today what we want to do is to go to start a multi-part discussion about how to become a social business. What we talk about in terms of this is 7 steps to becoming a social business. We're probably not going to get through all of the steps today. We'll probably get through at least 3 of them, and then we'll continue our discussion in the next few weeks talking about objectives and strategy, and we're going to move our way towards a discussion around ROI. But today, what we want to focus in is how social media impacts the traditional functional roles as well as impacts the company at large. And from there, talk about some of the benefits of social monitoring. And I see that we do have a question about how we can stimulate customers to get more social. So we'll work on bringing that into the conversation as well. Natalie, you do a really good job of doing the initial showcasing of how social media impacts traditional functional roles. Would you like to start us off on that discussion?
Sure, I'd love to. So one of the things that we have seen as we've been studying this and helping working with clients is that traditionally in most industries, marketing professionals, PR professionals got social before anybody else in the organization did. And their role is really changing quite a bit because their main purpose was to create awareness for a brand and or push customers through the marketing funnel. And so now they're being faced with this new dynamic of social media interaction. So before they were populating websites with content, now they're populating social networks. And it's a very different animal because people are going to start to interact with you. And oftentimes the interactions are not necessarily positive. And so what we're seeing is that customer service professionals who are used to answering issues and problems are more akin to having those two-way conversations. So there's a little bit of a learning curve for some marketers and PR people. And then you have customer service who's used to doing this, but a little bit later to the table than marketing and PR people. And then you have salespeople who are saying, okay, social is great. Show me the bottom line, right? I need to understand how I can really deliver more revenue to the bottom line. And then I think kind of the last group of people internal to a company are the C-level executives. And most of them, it's very, very, very few that we have executives who really understand the business value. And that's part of the thought leadership that Kathy and I are focusing on, is I think executives understand, well, we probably need to do social, but I'm not sure they understand how mission critical it is. And what we're really trying to work towards is helping them understand it so that it reduces the amount of organizational change management that needs to occur to get PR, marketing, customer service, and other departments to play well together. And then there's the social media vendors, right? So they're, you know, it's very difficult to create a magic quadrant or a Forrester wave and put all of the vendors into one thing. So what we're seeing is a lot of confusion about what technology needs to be implemented. And on the vendor side, a lot of vendors are having trouble honing their message. So most of their messaging has come from, they're really targeting the innovators and early adopters. But the bulk of the marketplace and where we are in social media is we're really in the third wave, which is addressing that early majority. So I see kind of vendors as well as system integrators, web design, consulting for big agencies. They're looking at really understanding how do you bring the right talent in, and then how do you tailor your traditional offerings so that it hits and really speaks to that early majority audience that really wants to understand the business impacts.
I think, you know, Natalie, you make some really good points. And one of the things that really pops out at me with social business is that it's more important today than it ever has been in the past for the different functional roles to coordinate with one another. And the reason for that is because what your company does can get exposed to the public very quickly through social media channels. And so if there is a failure to coordinate, say, marketing with customer service or operational functions with customer service, then those failures are going to become publicized much more quickly than they ever have in the past. And if you want a good example of that, something that is very topical is what's happening with RIM, Research in Motion, right now with their outage. There's a lot I can say about that, and there's a lot I have said about it because I just did a video blog post about the situation from a social business standpoint. But let me make a point here that's relevant to this discussion. One of the things that happened was in the outage, it occurred in the UK, and from what I can see looking at the news reports, apparently the UK operational people failed to communicate to the corporate folks in Canada, their corporate customer service, that there was a problem so that those folks could be prepared to address the issue. And my only thought is that maybe the UK people thought that because it was a regional impact, that it wasn't necessary to tell the folks on another continent about what the problem was. But what they were failing to understand is that because of social channels like Twitter, that regional problem got global exposure. And that made it important for the corporate people to really understand what the nature of the problem was so that they could communicate with customers. So you can't just exist in your silos anymore. You really have to consider what your marketing messages are going to do in terms of customer service or in the opposite direction. And if you fail to do that, then all you're going to do is just to make your customers that much angrier at your failure to properly engage them. Nally, is there anything else that you want to add in about traditional roles before we move on to understanding the impacts on the company itself?
Well, I think one of the things that I'd like to see companies do is to have some sort of center of excellence. And I would really like to see C-level executives really understanding the business value, and that's why we're focusing a lot of our educational pieces on that. Because I think otherwise what happens, what we're seeing, is we're seeing a lot of internal infighting, and vendors are frustrated, right, because they're trying to help with social media to, you know, to make it scalable and more automatic. But sales are getting stalled, and people are not getting the tools that they need. And also what you see, you know, oftentimes is people who really understand social in an enterprise and then people who don't. And then the people who don't want to, so there was a company that I was working with, and the PR and marketing department, or PR and customer service department, had built a really good customer service Twitter handle. Marketing saw how many users it had, and they said, hey, we want that Twitter handle. And customer service said, well, that's maybe not such a good idea because, you know, that's where people come to get service and help. And what marketing heard was, I'm not going to give you my handle because I don't want you to be popular. Long story short, marketing took over the handle. And when people went there for service, the marketing people responded with, we don't do service at this handle anymore. And what happened was customers started unfollowing the brand and saying horrible things about them in Twitter and Facebook. And so when you don't have a clear understanding of the roles and responsibilities inside of an organization, you will stall your social media capabilities. You will never reach social media maturity or excellence, and you will suffer brand damage in the social sphere. And why that's so important is because it's public. Everybody can see your mistakes, and all companies and all people make mistakes. It's some of these things are avoidable, and what we're seeing is this thing about functional roles and people being able to really understand how important this is and to put aside functional silos and past understandings of roles and responsibilities and really come together as a collaborative team is really the most important thing that we can do today in business.
You know, Nally, I'm glad you mentioned that because I think it brings up an important point, is that part of what customers want is a consistent experience with you. And they don't want to have to be bothered with learning what your processes are. So if they come in and they're approaching your company, they don't want to worry about whether they're talking to a marketing person or a customer service person or a salesperson. If they're seeking help or they're seeking answers, they want answers. And your company has to be prepared to provide that. And a customer shouldn't have to be an insider to figure out how to get answers. And if that's what's required of your customers, then consider your business to have a fail that you have to overcome. So while it's realistic, or while it may be viable, that marketing may have a Twitter handle and customer service may have a Twitter handle, what you don't want to do if a customer comes in through the quote-unquote wrong door, like if a customer service customer comes into the marketing Twitter handle, is you don't want to blow them off and say things like, well, we don't take care of that. The better approach is going to be to maybe acknowledge, oh, you know, we focus on this kind of discussion, but I've helped you out by forwarding your request to the right group, and they're going to get back to you. Something proactive on the customer rather than, washing your hands of it because you're not the right group for them to talk to. Give customers a consistent customer experience. Let them approach you how they're going to approach you. And then in the background, figure out who is the right person for that customer to talk to. So let's go on and extend our discussion into step number two, which is understanding how social business is going to impact your company. And again, what we're talking about is the business of social business. So we're not talking today about how do you necessarily construct a marketing campaign. What we're talking about is understanding the impact on people, processes, and technology so that you can implement a sustainable business approach that is going to help you to increase your shareholder value. And so let me go ahead and start that discussion with talking about people. What we're looking for in the people dynamic of social business is creating a collaborative and engaging corporate culture. And one of the questions that we have is other than reward programs, how can you encourage customers to get social? Well, one of the ways to do that is through engaging your customers. But here's a truism that you have to understand, is in order to be really engaging with your customers, it really starts from the inside. If you don't have an engaging corporate culture, you're not going to be as effective when you take that culture outside in terms of engaging with your customers. So part of how you build this collaborative culture is you have to be willing to empower employees. And that means that you have to create room for them to take initiative. And this is hard for executives to hear. So let me say this again. A collaborative culture, the first step requires empowering employees. Now, there are some advantages to that because it does create room for a flatter hierarchy, and it does create an opportunity to have a much more employee set that's going to be populating your company. And part of what it also recognizes when you empower employee that authoritative voices are based on contributions, on depth of knowledge. It's not just based on a hierarchical position on the corporate ladder. Natalie, I don't want to steal away your thunder. Would you like to add to the people part of things as well?
Well, I think, I've been working on a lot of social media maturity assessments, and I was talking to my friends over at Benchmark Portal because we're talking about maybe doing a social media customer service index. And we were kind of joking, but we said, wouldn't it be funny if we did a social media maturity on the people in business index? And we were coming up with all kinds of funny things that we could do in extra normal. And I think one of the things is that the level of maturity required to do social media is really high. And I think that companies that are not used to collaborating will find themselves at a loss. And, we kind of saw, and I know I've brought this up before, but I want to kind of continue to create the same thread content. One of the things that we saw in the apology from Netflix was that he really didn't understand what he did wrong. And I think when we look at that, it's not that he's not a very, very intelligent person or a good leader. I think that it was a culture that they just weren't used to receiving feedback and having to integrate that feedback into a company. And so, Kathy, your points on culture are really, really key. Social media isn't going to work, or you're not going to reach, you can do the basic, put up a Twitter and a Facebook page and have some conversations, offer a coupon, but you're really not going to be able to hit your stride and really get the largest return on investment if you've not really addressed the issues around people and culture and collaboration. And what we find in companies that have amazing collaboration cultures, people feel wanted, they feel appreciated, they feel like they're making a difference, which in this day and age when we're all asking everyone to work really hard, the ability to sustain the workforce, to work as hard as we're all working, is really, you really need to have people feel appreciated. So feeling appreciated or you're making a difference really translates to higher productivity, which definitely affects your bottom line. And I guess I would just end this thought here with reward the behavior you want repeated. So if you want people to share and collaborate, you want your organization to have higher productivity, then as leaders, we need to start facilitating those behavior changes.
And what I would add to what Natalie just said is, key within a collaborative organization is sharing information rather than hoarding it. So let me say this in another way, that in a transparent organization, you share information to the degree it's legally feasible. Now, we all have to recognize that there is certain information that needs to remain private for perhaps for fiduciary responsibilities. But beyond the legal requirements, be open within your company and external to it. And here's the thing that you have to understand. I'm going to talk about power for just a minute because this is where a lot of companies stumble. Sharing information goes back to empowering employees. And again, part of the fear there, especially among some of the leadership, is the loss of control. But here's what you have to remember, is that empowerment is about unleashing people's creativity by unfettering them from control. And when you have a workforce that's motivated and creative, you can solve amazing problems. That's when you can start to do amazing product innovation that can lead to products not only that customers want to buy, but are going to increase your revenues. So empowerment requires trust. Executives have to trust that employees will act responsibly and use their time wisely, as well as make the decisions that will act in the company's best interest. But on the flip side, employees must be able to trust that executives really are seeding them with personal power and autonomy in order to accomplish their work goals and requirements. So it really is a two-way sort of street. So we've had some questions that have come up around, well, how do you start? Well, one of the first ways that can happen, and some of this is going to have to be top-down, and this is where I disagree with a lot of people. A lot of social media pundits want to talk about social being a bottom-up initiative, and I think Natalie agrees with me, it has to be as much of a top-down as it is bottom-up. So a great way to start is for executives to actually start seeding empowerment and control to their own employees, to let them act. And some of that can start with training. That's how executives can gain confidence in their own employees, is by engaging in training. So employees have clear expectations about the pitfalls that they should avoid and where they can move forward in taking initiative. What I'd like to do now is to move the discussion along to processes. Everything starts with people. If you're starting it anywhere else in this chain, you're starting at the wrong end. You're starting at the caboose rather than the engine, because people are the engine. But one of the things that companies have to grapple with whatever they do, with whatever business model they undertake, is that they have to be able to be efficient and effective. And that's where workflow processes come into play. And so what you have to understand, and again, we're talking about a social business model, not a social media campaign here or a social media campaign there. If you're going to deploy a social media model, it's a change management challenge and opportunity. And that's going to require you to change how you manage your business workflows, how you collect information about your customers, your partners, and your activities, and how you analyze the results. And for a balanced social model, you have to have processes that are going to be humanistic, including being customer-centric and collaborative, as well as being efficient, cost-effective, and scalable. And what I advise my clients is, if you have to err on the side of being creating processes that favor the company versus processes that favor the customer, err on the side of the customer and be humanistic. Natalie, what are your thoughts in terms of processes?
Well, I think one of the interesting things as a software analyst and a systems integrator, that oftentimes what I would see was people would say, okay, we want to do X faster, better. And then what they would do is they would look at the software that's being offered and they'd say, okay, well, we want to tailor the software to our processes because reworking the process would be too much work. And I think that most companies don't take the time to sit down and do business process mapping and to map out, you know, from the customer's point of view, from procurement's point of view, from sales point of view, what is the process of the various things that our customers and our employees have to do. It's a big undertaking, but when you do it, you really start to see where you can get efficiencies. You start to see where you can be more cost effective. You can see how technology can increase your scalability. And the other thing is that whenever you implement technology, what you want is people to adopt it. And one of the things that happens when you implement new technology is that people think they're going to be replaced. And so what they do is they drag their feet. And so part of doing the business process mapping, what's really important about that is to be able to engage people in the change process. So if you go to them and you say, hey, we're thinking about changing how we approach social customer service or social sales or PR and marketing in our company, here's what we're thinking about doing. Here's some of the vendors we're reviewing. What do you think? And it takes a very mature facilitator to be able to listen to not invented here and why it can't be done and all those conversations to get people to get all of that stuff out and then be open to looking at what's new and what can be done. I mean, I think in 2001, I wrote a book with John Anton over at Benchmark Portal called People, Process, and Technology. And we looked at what it's required to facilitate change within an organization when you're implementing technology. And I really can't stress how important process is, especially with respect to social, because now you're not just looking at processes that are internal to your company, but you're looking at processes that are externally facing where people can see. And, you know, I remember back when I was working at Apple, when the iPod first came out, we were working with order management, and they were sending emails saying your iPod will be here in 2 weeks. And what we found was there was a difference in the ship date from China and the delivery date to your house, which the ship date from China, which is the 2 weeks, which that's what they're reporting. And then there was another 2 weeks. So it was really a 4 week timeline. But if we're not really understanding language, we're not understanding what that process is. So customer service ended up answering thousands of calls because after 2 weeks, people are like, okay, well, where's my iPod? Right? Because that's what they had been told. And so if we're not really looking at those business processes, we're not really reporting, we're not delivering on our promise of what we said we would do, and we're not looking at ways to streamline it, we're just going to end up costing the company a lot more money. And if you think about every single call to the call center, look at the ones that like that could have been prevented, you're saving a lot of money, in many cases, millions of dollars, by really understanding your processes and doing that business process mapping.
Great. Thanks, Natalie. So let's move the discussion forward a little bit and talk about technology. Natalie and I have both been active in the SCRM community and Twitter and other thought leadership arenas. And quite often when you talk about social CRM, people focus on technology. And, you know, we're among the group that says really what counts is the people and the strategy, and technology becomes an enabler. But having said that, even though technology follows from first people to processes, and it's the third in the chain, it's still an important contributor to becoming a social business, because a lot of where the social activities play out is in the social web, and that's where technology comes into play. So, in order to be effective in social business, you have to have the right technology solution set. And what the right solution set is going to be will be dependent upon what your strategy is. Now, next week, we're going to be talking more about strategy. So we'll be revisiting technology as we go. But today, let us just take a few minutes to introduce the different technology components that can go into a social business platform. The foundation of it is going to be your CRM solution, your traditional customer relationship management solution. So examples of that would be Salesforce, RightNow, other kinds of systems that allow you to collect information, transactional information about your customers. That could be contact information, sales, case histories for support, or other related customer activities. Then the next step is going to be social CRM add-ons. Now, imagine if you have a situation where you have customers that are actively carrying on social conversations in different online channels. And imagine if you had the capability to pull those conversations into your customer service application, so you could turn those conversations, if a customer had a question, you could turn that into a case and assign it to a customer service agent who can then follow that through to completion. In order to do something like that, that requires some kind of social CRM add-on. And there are a variety of vendors who have different ways of doing that. And some of them may be embedded within their customer service application. Some of them may require you to add a new feature functionality. And if you can also take that and extend it where you could take that conversation and that resolution and push it back out into the community, then you have the capability to share information back out to the many, as well as to create a knowledge base article that will alleviate future needs for customers to call in for information. Natalie, would you like to take over and talk some more about some of the other technology solutions?
Yeah, so I think that what's important is to really understand what your business proposition is, like what is it that you're really trying to do? And so, you know, let's say you're trying to increase awareness. Let's say you're trying to increase marketing conversion rate. Let's say you're trying to decrease customer service costs. Then I would say, okay, if those are some of your goals, then now let's start to look at the landscape of technology that can allow you to do that. So one of the secret sauces for social media is a community. Very, very important. A lot of people skip this step, and I was working with a client who was, he did a lot of lead conversion rate, and he had a site where he did a lot of insurance lead conversion rates. And so he built this other site, and he couldn't understand why people weren't signing up. And I said, well, because there's no community. And he said, but this is a website. And I said, no, social media is about peer-to-peer interactions, peer-to-peer trust. And so I think that a lot of people don't understand that social media is really about a two-way interaction with a brand. And if you don't have technology that allows that two-way interaction, you're not doing social media. So a community is really important, having some sort of community platform. What's more important than that is making a community work. So along with the technology for a community, you also need to understand the super user rule, which is 1-9-90, kind of some, that kind of range of people. So 1% are the super users, 9% are the responders, and 90% are the lurkers. You have to have that kind of, you have to go out and find your super users, engage them, enroll them. You need a really great community manager. Because otherwise, it would be like having a party and then having, you know, with a bunch of strangers in the room, and nobody going around and making those introductions, nobody creating the conversation. So I think that one of the misnomers about, well, technology in general, is what is that business value that you're really looking to get out of it? And then how are you going to apply that? And so we didn't do a really good job, or as good a job as we could have, implementing CRM, right, or customer service applications, or we were always telling our organizations to do more with less. And now along comes social, and social has the same criteria. You really have to understand your business case, but now it has this other component of interaction and public postings. And so really understanding the technology, your business value, and how it's going to affect your business and how you're going to be perceived as a business is all part of that technology selection strategy.
You know, and I think, you know, you said some golden words there, Natalie, is about the peer-to-peer interaction and peer-to-peer trust. And I'm looking at the question that Tara originally posted about how, other than reward programs, how can you encourage your customers to get social? Well, you know, I think Natalie hit on it with it being a conversation. And think about it from the standpoint of going to a social event, like a party. If you go into that party and all you do is spend time blasting out information about yourself and you're not actually conversing with other people, you're going to bore those other people. And a lot of times, and I'm probably going to get into trouble for saying this, but a lot of times with marketing messaging and social channels, that's what's happening. Is they're just a glorified form of a broadcast. They're not a conversation. So you have to go to the next step. And part of that is figuring out what your customers are interested in, what they want to be talking about. And if you do that and you start to meet up with them to share that information, then that's how you can start to get them to engage. So let me give a couple of examples. Last week, we talked about Progressive as being a good example of a customer-centric company and how they're using technology in order to enable that centricity. So let me take them again this week, but from a little bit different perspective. Because one of the things that Progressive does, for example, is they're active on Twitter. Now, one of the things that they do in order to foster conversation, but also to help their customers is, you know, they focus in on disasters. So if a disaster is looming, they may share information about something like how to protect your boat in the event of a hurricane. So they're providing insight into something that a customer may be interested in. They can also foster conversation with them. And they're not focused on trying to sell their services. They're trying to help a customer safeguard what could be an important asset so that the customer's lives can be better. You know, another example that comes to mind is Home Depot. And Home Depot is a company that gets a lot of focus in times of natural disasters because they have the home repair products that can help a company either safeguard their home or can restore it after a disaster happens. And so one of the things that they do when there is an impending natural disaster is they'll get out and they'll tweet out information about the disaster as well. If one of the stores runs out of a product, like for example, a snowstorm is coming, a blizzard is predicted, and a local store has run out of snow shovels, they'll get out and they'll tweet what other stores still have shovels in stock or when they expect to get a delivery truck with restocking of the shovels. So again, customers have important information that they value that will impact their lives so that they can be prepared for it. So if you're going out to social and all you want to do is talk about yourself and not be interested in your customers, you're going to have a hard time engaging them in social. So find ways to get them interested by focusing on what is of interest to them and what's going to help their lives, and you're going to be able to get them to engage in that conversation.
And I think in terms of how do we get our customers to be more social, I think it's about a company being more social. So depending on, you know, whether you're B2B or B2C, if you don't have a place for people to have a conversation with you, you don't have a Twitter handle, a Facebook handle, a community, a blog to read, then you're not really giving people the opportunity to interact with you very well. And the other thing is, you know, just having those platforms isn't the same. So I'm working with a brand right now and they asked me to review their social media capabilities. And I looked on their Facebook page and every post that they post, it's them and nobody's responding. And so one of the things that that I think is a misnomer about social media is just because you're posting stuff in Twitter or Facebook, if nobody's responding to you at all, then you're not really doing social media because you're not engaging in a conversation. And there's a lot of different engagement tactics. I mean, a coupon is the most basic of tactics, polls, surveys. I would take a look at Facebook's NBA site. So one of the things inside of Facebook that the NBA did was during the playoffs, they took clips of like the best free-throw shot or the best, you know, clutch shot or rebound. And they did a little short video of those recaps, and then they gave people the ability to vote on who you thought did the best. So they created a place where people could express their opinions, share their thoughts. And so by creating something engaging that was meaningful, and they also had live chats during the playoffs, and then they also had an NBA store where you could go and buy merchandising. That's a different level of engagement and interacting with your customers and giving them some way to have a conversation. Completely different than hiring an intern to post posts in Facebook.
You know, and you know what I'd like to do now with the last few minutes is segue into a conversation about social monitoring, because that's our third step. Is you have to listen and figure out where your customers are, and a great way to do that is with social monitoring. Now, we've been talking about the value of social data in the first few sessions. And so if you want to gain insight about transactional data versus social data and why it's so important to your company, then go back and listen to our first two sessions about this. What I want to talk about today, though, is that imagine trying to go to a party. You know, you want to go out on Friday night, and you want to be where all the people are, and you don't know where that is. So I guess one of the ways you could do it is just to kind of wander around town until you happen to find a party. But it's not real effective as if somebody actually tells you where the party's going to be. Well, that's what social monitoring can do for you, is by going in and using social tools, social analytic tools, you can find out where people are already engaging in conversations about your company products and your services. So it's not always about creating a Facebook page or always about creating your own forum. If there's already places where people are talking, then that's a great place to go and show up. And here's something to remember. There's a wide range of pricing associated with social monitoring solutions. There's everything from free all the way up to some expensive solutions that also provide you with a deep level of analytical intelligence. So part of what you need to look at is what your budget can afford and what your objective are. But don't overlook free. And for God's sakes, if nothing else is coming out of RIM in the last few days, pay attention to what people are saying. Because let's look at what happened with RIM. They jumped in on Monday morning, 3 hours into a crisis with a major outage, and customer service came online and said, "Hey, everybody, happy Monday, and we're here to answer your questions." But no, they're really not, because here's a whole host of unhappy customers that are active in Twitter, and they didn't even bother to take a few moments to see what the recent conversations were. And they could have done that easily with TweetDeck or Hootsuite. They didn't have to spend a dime to go back and see what those conversations are. So, you know, this comes back to how do you engage your customers? How do you work with them? Well, pay attention to what they're saying. Pay attention to it and be prepared to address what their questions and their concerns are. It looks like we're at our 45-minute mark. So it's time for us to close down to today's discussion. What we want to do next week is to come back and to continue into the steps 4, 5, and however far we can go about how you become a social business. And we're going to be focusing in next week in particular about objectives and strategy. And what we're going to be doing is building towards a discussion on ROI. And when we are having our discussion, we plan on opening our kimonos and getting specific. There are a lot of different ways that we can approach discussions around social strategy, social ROI. And what we want to do is to focus in a way that's going to be most meaningful for you, the listeners. So what we would like to do is invite you all to give us your feedback, preferably if you can, in advance of the next few weeks, so that we can be prepared to focus our discussion in the direction that you want it. So please reach out to us on Focus through our blogs. Both have ways to connect with us via email, Twitter, and Google+. So please, if this is a topic that interests you, please reach out to us and give us your feedback of what you're most interested in so that we can focus our discussion towards those aims. Natalie, is there anything you'd like to say in closing?
No, we'd just love to hear from you. We really appreciate the people that do tune in, and we'd love your points of view. If you agree with us, we'd love to hear that. If you disagree with us, we'd love to hear that more, because it's really in the conversation that we all teach and learn at the same time and help forward the thought leadership. So we look forward to hearing from you.
Thanks. And Katie, it's back to you.
Great. Thank you guys so much for the discussion today, and thanks to all of our attendees for participating and joining us. The next episode will be next Wednesday, October 19th at 11 o'clock, same time, same place, Strategy of Social Business. You can sign up for this event on Focus. The landing page is up on Focus right now, and I've been putting it into the live chat stream, so hopefully you can just click the URL. We'll also be promoting it on Twitter. So we look forward to seeing everyone there. I hope you have a great rest of the week. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Bye, everybody.